The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. It's Yukon King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the Northwest, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On King! On, you Huskies!
Gold! Gold discovered in the Yukon. A stampede to the Klondike in the wild race for riches. Back to the days of the gold rush. With Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog, Yukon King, as they meet the challenge of the Yukon. Here's a mutual note for you. Every afternoon at 5 o'clock over Mutual, it's time for fun for everyone who loves stories of daring adventure and breathless excitement. At 5 every Monday, Bobby Benson, young boss of the B-Bar B Ranch, takes you on a rangeland trip to the Big Bend country of Texas. Wednesday and Friday, the Green Hornet roams the streets in his specially built car on his mysterious missions to avenge crime. And at 5:30 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Wild Bill Hickok brings more tales of Western action. At 5 o'clock Tuesday and Thursday, Sergeant Preston of the Yukon follows the trail to danger, accompanied by his faithful husky, Yukon King. And at 5:30, it's Sky King. Don't forget, 5 o'clock every afternoon, Monday through Friday, over Mutual, is Time for Fun. With Bobby Benson, the Green Hornet, Wild Bill Hickok, Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, and Sky King, all over most of these stations. As the whaler Northern Pursuit sailed through the Golden Gate and into the open sea, a haze lay over the harbor, and the sun shone blood red in the sky. Old Lige shook his fist at it.
There's a curse on this cruise. The sign is in the sky. There's not a man aboard who won't regret he set foot on this deck.
The young second mate, Kim Clark, called him to task.
That's enough of such talk, Lige. There's no sign in the sky.
Look at the sun, Mr. Clark.
There's a forest fire in the mountains. That's the reason for the haze, and it's the haze that makes the sun look red. There'll be nothing wrong with it once we're clear of land. Now get to work.
Aye, aye, sir. To work it is. But mind my words.
Fair weather didn't change Lige's conviction that the voyage was cursed. And as the ship drove north, and not a whale was sighted, the crew began to share his forebodings. But at last, in that arm of the Arctic Ocean called the Beaufort Sea, the first whale was sighted. From then on, hunting was good, and the men's superstitions were forgotten in hard work. At the end of a month, the ship's hold was half full of oil. But by then, the wind from the pole was bitter cold. And as the men huddled around the stove in the forecastle, Lige began to mutter again.
Few whales haven't changed my mind any. You can never trust the sea. A few whales. The sea can spare them, and is using them to bait the trap for us. The skipper won't leave these waters until the hole is filled. By then it'll be too late. The ice will get us. Hold us prisoner till spring. And who knows how many of us will be alive by then. I've been icebound before, and I know what it does to men. Fighting the cold and starving to death little by little until a man wants to die. The ship is cursed.
Kim Clark happened to step into the forecastle as the old man was talking.
So you're at it again, Lige.
I know what I'm talking about, Mr. Clark. If you'd spent as many years as I have at sea, you'd be able to smell the winter in the wind, too.
The captain believes we'll have another month before the freeze-up. I hope the rest of you aren't paying any attention to Lige's talk.
We wouldn't mind being on our way home, sir.
Well, I don't blame you for that. Still, you must realize the captain wouldn't take any chances with his ship or his crew.
That's one man's opinion.
So is everything you've said, Lige. And I'm ordering you to keep your opinions to yourself or they'll be reported to the captain. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
From that moment, Lige hated Kim, and his hatred seemed to twist his mind. His tongue gripped venom whenever he spoke of the young second mate, and his prophecies of disaster became more and more frequent. He took care, however, that Kim didn't overhear them. 2 weeks later, the last whale had been processed. The captain was charting the homeward voyage. Then the barometer began to fall. The storm hit the ship. The wind blew from the west, and the captain tried taking it on his quarter and steering a course for Point Barrow. Soon became impossible. The gale increased in fury. The whaler was tossed about like a toy, and giant waves swept over it. One of them washed the first mate overboard. And only a moment later, there was an ominous crack. The mainmast splintered and crashed to the deck. Then the storm seemed to be satisfied. And a few hours later, it was possible to hoist sail fore and aft. The whaler limped into the shelter of a small island cove.
Drop anchor, Mr. Clark! Aye, aye, sir.
The anchor was dropped, and the men worked desperately to repair the damage caused by the storm, to caulk seams and erect a jury mast. It was then that Lige appeared before the captain.
Sir, I have a serious accusation to make.
I have no time for your complaints, Lige. Get back to work.
It's my duty to speak, sir.
All right, all right. What's the matter now?
I saw Mr. Simpson, the first mate, go overboard. I was stowing gear in the forward locker, and I saw the wave that caught him. Mr. Clark was up there in the bow with him.
I know that. Mr. Clark reported to me immediately afterward.
That's what I should have done, sir. I should have told you what I saw.
Well, what did you see?
Mr. Simpson had a firm grip on the anchor when the big wave hit us. I saw Mr. Clark tear his hands loose.
Ridiculous.
It happened. I saw it. I'm accusing Mr. Clark of murder.
I'll not be annoyed with your vicious nonsense at a time like this.
I know the law, sir. I've made a charge, and it's your duty to call Mr. Clark before the mast to answer it.
There'll be no one called before the mast. Not even you, Lige, until we have a mast. Now get back to work.
Aye, aye, sir.
By the time the repairs were completed and the whaler sailed from the shelter of the island, it was the first week in October. It was 500 miles to Point Barrow, and the ship was forced to buck headwinds day after day.
Temperature's falling, sir.
If we make Point Barrow, we'll be all right.
Is there a chance, sir?
Hope for the wind to change to the northeast.
But the wind never changed, and it grew colder and colder. The film of ice on the surface of the water grew thicker, and now there were only a few hours of sunshine each day. The ice never melted, and it grew more and more difficult for the ship to force its way through the crust. The day came when, still far from sight of land, the ice held her fast. A blizzard whipped out of the north to coat the spars and the hull with white and make the whaler part of the great frozen desert that stretched from horizon to horizon. The captain took stock of the situation with Kim.
We must face it, Mr. Clark. Food and coal must be rationed. We'll keep only 3 stoves going. One in the forecastle, one in the galley, and one in my cabin. You'll move in with me.
Aye, aye, sir.
For your information, it will be at least 7 months before the ice breaks.
Two months passed. 2 months of deadly monotony. And men who had never listened to Lige before gathered around him, an attentive audience, especially when he talked of murder.
And that's how it happened, I swear it. That's how Mr. Simpson died.
Oh, stow the gab, Lige. There's never any hard feelings between Clark and Simpson. Why should Clark want to kill him?
To get his berth. Who's the first mate now? I ask you that.
The captain took sick. Pneumonia. Kim Clark stayed with him every minute, doing his best to nurse him back to health. But the captain died. He was sewn into canvas and buried deep in the snow beside the ship. The crew surrounded the grave as Kim read the burial service, and then returned to their quarters. When the forecastle hatch was barred behind them...
Now he's got what he wants.
Shut up, Lige.
He's mastered the ship, isn't he?
It wasn't his fault the captain died.
You sure of that, Ben? Would he let any of us come near the skipper while he was sick?
What do any of us know about tending a sick man?
He might have got well if he had some other nurse.
He died of pneumonia.
Yeah, according to Mr. Clark. But he let no one examine the body. Sewed him in canvas himself. Put weights in the canvas, too. When spring comes and the ice melts, the captain's body will sink down to the bottom of the sea.
Naturally.
And no one will ever know how the captain died.
What are you suggesting, Lige?
The same thing that's in all your minds. The captain was murdered, just like the first mate was. But this time, with the sea frozen, Mr. Clark had to use poison.
Poison?
Is that you say?
Where did he get any poison?
Why don't you ask him? Why don't we all ask him?
He'd think we were crazy.
Or smart. Maybe too smart. If we came out into the open and accused him, he might poison us.
Well, it was mighty strange, his keeping everybody out of the captain's cabin.
Yeah.
But there's no way to prove what you're suggesting, Lige.
If we had a doctor among us, a doctor who could perform an autopsy, we'd find out the truth.
Yeah, there's no sense in talking about that.
You're right. No sense in talking at all. Something should be done.
Lige sat by the stove and brooded. He became more and more convinced that his imagination was telling him the truth. That Kim Clark actually was guilty of two murders. With conviction came real fear. If Clark were capable of killing the first mate and the captain, then anyone who suspected him of crime was in real danger.
It's kill or be killed between him and me.
The idea took complete possession of his brain. He stole a knife from the galley and hid it in his bunk. He waited until everyone was asleep on the forecastle. Then he slipped out. The snow on the deck cushioned his footsteps. He reached the companionway leading to Kim's cabin. He stopped, listened, and then crept down it. The door was unlocked. The light from the Aurora showed him Kim sleeping in his bunk. Lige couldn't control the cry that rose to his throat.
Lige!
It was the only thing that saved Kim's life. The young officer woke in time to grab Lige's wrist, twist the knife in his hand, and shove him back across the cabin. Lige stumbled and fell to the deck, disarmed and sobbing with rage.
You were trying to kill me.
It's all you deserve, a knife in your heart, you murderer.
What are you talking about?
You killed the first mate and the captain.
Oh, Lige, the captain warned me. He said your mind was going.
That's a lie.
But I didn't realize you could be dangerous. Now something must be done about it.
Help!
Stop that screaming. I'm not going to hurt you.
Help! He's going to kill me!
No, Lige. I'm going to lock you in the cabin next to this one.
At that moment, the crew came running down the companionway.
Mr. Clark! What are you doing with that knife?
I took it away from Lige.
He's going to lock me up so I can't tell what I know.
You tried to kill Mr. Clark.
It was either him or me. Save me! Save yourself!
Don't let him get away, Ben.
I have him, sir.
Mason, light the stove in the next cabin. Hold it. When it gets warmed up, we'll put him in there and padlock the door.
Is that all you're going to do? The attack's mutiny.
He isn't responsible. That should be plain to all of you. You'll simply make sure that he doesn't make any more trouble.
Don't listen to him. I'm sane and he's a killer. You're fools. You're fools. You're fools.
It took force to lock Lige up. By the time the job was completed, the crew was convinced of his mania. But the seed of suspicion he had planted in their minds concerning Kim remained there. Possibly because they had nothing else to think about. Lige's hatred, meanwhile, had turned against the whole crew, and the urge arose to destroy them all. His chance came when he found the crowbar underneath the first mate's sea chest in a corner of the cabin. He waited until the ship was silent before he started working on the door. Half an hour later, Ben Smith, the bosun, woke up in the forecastle.
Hey. Smell something burning.
So do I.
Stronger over here by the hatch. It's oil that's burning.
Oil. The oil in the hole.
Come on.
Kim was already on deck when the men reached it. Great tongues of flame were shooting toward the sky from the bow of the ship. And by their light, the crew could see Lige standing by an open hatch.
Oh, you alone! Get what's coming to you!
Lige, come here!
Lige turned to run. His foot slipped on the icy deck. He stumbled and fell into the fiery hole. We'll continue our adventure in just a moment. Last year, forest fires swept across thousands of acres of grass and tree-covered lands. They crippled watersheds and induced flash floods. They destroyed millions of precious board feet of potential lumber and other wood products. They brought death to animals and fish. They ruined cherished picnic and camping areas. Most of those fires were not necessary. They were caused by thoughtless or careless people. A traveler flipped a lighted match or cigarette from his moving car. A camper left his glowing campfire unattended. A farmer or rancher underestimated the wind in burning off brush or debris. Here's how you can help prevent the needless waste that comes from forest fires. Crush out cigarette, cigar, or pipe ashes. Break matches in two after using. Drown all campfires. Stir and then drown again. Find out the law before using fire. The loss resulting from forest fires weakens America. Remember, only you can prevent it. Now to continue.
Unchain! On you, Husky!
Sergeant Preston had learned of the ice-bound whaler at one of the Eskimo villages and had decided to visit it before returning to Herschel Island, where he was stationed for the winter. He saw the flames 10 miles away, and when he reached the ship, it was nothing but a charred hulk. The crew were huddled around a campfire built to the lee of the ship.
Hulking! Fire, Husky! Hello, hello! Who's in command here?
I am. Second mate of this ship. The name's Kim Clark.
Sergeant Preston, Northwest Mounted Police. We must find better shelter for your men.
Well, we thought that when the timbers cooled...
An igloo's a better idea. I'll show you how to build one.
With his snow knife, the sergeant cut blocks of snow and instructed the men how to build an igloo. When it was completed, two oil stoves that had been saved from the ship were carried inside, along with the sergeant's primus. They soon made the interior of the igloo comfortably warm, and light was provided by the sergeant's seal oil lamp. The men huddled close together as Clark told the sergeant of everything that had happened on their ill-fated cruise. And then the sergeant considered the future.
You haven't saved many supplies.
We didn't have a chance, Sergeant. The ship burned like a torch.
Oh. Sure appreciate your building the snow house for us, Sergeant. It's more comfortable than our forecastle ever was. We could stay here forever.
And starve to death? No, there can be no question of your staying here.
But where can we go?
The Northwest Mounted Post at Herschel Island. About 100 miles to the southwest.
Walk 100 miles? We'd never make it.
Well, I'm sure you can. There's a crust on the snow. We should be able to make nearly 20 miles a day. When the time comes to rest, we'll build 3 small igloos like this one and heat them with these stoves. When you've eaten and slept, you'll find you have strength enough to go on.
We'll do it, Sergeant.
Good. Let's get started.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We've decided to leave here, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, are we going to leave the captain?
I understood the captain had died.
He did, and he's buried in the snow.
Well, it amounts to a burial at sea. Isn't that the customary thing for sailors?
Well, I'm speaking to you as a police officer, Sergeant. There's a question in some of our minds as to just how he died.
Wasn't it pneumonia, Clark?
Oh, as far as I could make out. The old man who set fire to the ship said he'd been poisoned.
But all of you know that Lige wasn't in his right mind.
And he also said you pushed the first mate overboard.
Do you believe that?
We don't know what to believe.
I don't believe it.
I'm speaking for all of the men but you, Ben. We don't know what to believe.
You're making an accusation?
It was Lige who made the accusation. He said that he saw Mr. Clark pull the first mate's hands away from the anchor that he was holding onto. And he asked a question that none of us have been able to answer. Why wouldn't Mr. Clark let anybody in the captain's cabin while the captain was sick? Why did he sew him into the shroud himself?
Well, what do you want me to do? Arrest Mr. Clark on suspicion of murder?
I don't say that.
What then?
The body we're thinking of. Is there a doctor at Herschel Island, Sergeant? Could he perform an autopsy?
He could.
We think it should be done.
And you, Mr. Clark?
Yes. Yes, it must be done. I had no idea that Elijah's poison could have worked so deep.
Very well, an autopsy should settle everything. We'll take the body with us.
The sergeant organized the expedition, and 2 hours later it set out. King and the team in front pulling the sled that carried the stove, supplies, and the body of the dead man. The sergeant walking behind the sled, and 15 men following him in single file. They set out with high hopes. But the bitter cold, the terrible distance that lay ahead, soon crushed the spirits of the men. They plodded along with their heads down. When camp was made and the igloos built, the men had hardly strength enough to eat before pulling their blankets around them and sinking into an exhausted sleep. To wake at the sergeant's call was agony.
All right, everybody up. Here's some hot tea to get you moving.
Sergeant, we've just gotten to sleep.
You've been sleeping for 10 hours.
Well,
I can't go on.
I'm moving out with the team and the sled in half an hour. The supplies go with me. It's up to you if you want to stay here.
Only the instinct for self-preservation kept them going. But as mile after mile was purchased at what seemed an impossible expenditure of strength, the urge to live weakened, and the desire to sleep became overpowering. The second camp was made. A third. A fourth. A fifth. The trip was taking longer than the sergeant had anticipated. But at the sixth, they were less than 20 miles from Herschel Island. There was no jubilation among the men, though. Their minds were filled with the desire for sleep. As soon as the igloos were finished, they stumbled inside and collapsed. The sergeant, however, fed the dogs and then checked the remaining supplies. When he entered the igloo, he shared with Kim and three other members of the crew. Kim was the only one who was awake.
Everything okay, Sergeant?
All the oil we have is in the stove.
But we'll not have to make another camp before reaching Herschel Island, will we?
There'd be no point. No, once we leave here, we'll have to keep going until we get there.
Sergeant Preston rolled into his blankets. As he slept, the wind rose. And when he woke, just 8 hours later, he knew a blizzard was raging outside the igloo.
Jim, wake up. Hear that wind?
Wind? Oh, yeah. Sounds like a full gale.
It's a blizzard. I'll make a big pot of tea.
A blizzard? Does that mean we'll be unable to go on?
We must go on.
Why? I mean, why can't we stay here until after the blizzard stops?
It may not stop for days. No, it's the same alternative the men have had every time we hit the trail. Go and live or stay and die. You'd better awaken them. Don't mention the blizzard. Get some food and hot tea into them.
Right, sir.
The men were awakened and ate their breakfast. The sergeant dug his sled out and harnessed the team. He had nearly finished when Kim's figure loomed through the whirling snow.
All set, Kim?
Sergeant, they've had a look at the storm. They refused to face it.
Did you tell them?
I told them everything you told me.
And it had no effect?
None. They're all in one igloo now. They put all the oil that's left in one stove. They intend to stay where they are.
They'll have warmth for a few hours, no more.
I told them that. Some of them laughed. One of them said better to die here than out on the trail.
So they're not afraid to die.
No, that's the way it seems.
I don't believe it. They're not afraid now because death is a few hours away. If they were face to face with it, it would... Kim, that gives me an idea.
What, Sergeant?
Make them face death.
What? You mean order them on at the point of a gun?
No, that wouldn't work. They know I wouldn't shoot them. But since Lige laid such a thorough groundwork in their minds, they might believe you'd poisoned them, just as you poisoned the captain.
But I didn't. And as soon as there's an autopsy, it'll be proved.
I'm sure of it.
You said...
I'm talking about what's in their minds. Their tired minds. And their tired bodies. Men in that condition can't think clearly, and that's why my plan may work.
I can't imagine...
Now listen. My team, even without King in the lead, will take you to Herschel Island if you simply give the command to Mush. Well, that's where you're going. You'll drive the...
A few minutes later, Kim stopped the sergeant's team in front of the igloo where all the men had gathered.
Ho, ho, ho! Hold on!
One of his men stuck his head out of the tunnel-like porch.
Sergeant, we're not going to... Hey, it isn't the sergeant, it's Mr. Clark.
Yes. You'll find the sergeant back at the other igloo. Knocked out and tied hand and foot.
What?
You didn't really think I'd let you perform an autopsy on the captain's body, did you? No, I'm getting rid of it.
Man, he's admitting he poisoned the captain.
Why not? You'll never tell anyone.
When we reach Herschel Island...
You'll never reach Herschel Island. Every one of you, including the sergeant, drank tea this morning. And that tea was loaded with the same poison I gave the captain. You'll never live to turn me over to the law. Marsh! Marsh on there!
Did you hear what he said?
He said we'd all been poisoned.
Wait, the sergeant. We gotta tell him.
The men found the sergeant lying in the snow. King was sitting beside him, his head cocked to one side and a rather puzzled look on his face. But the men paid no attention to him. They cut the ropes that bound the sergeant hand and foot.
No.
Sergeant, you all right?
I think so.
Clark's the killer, Sergeant. He admitted he poisoned the captain. He's gotten away with your team.
Well, we must get after him.
No, no, it'll do no good. He's poisoned us, too. It was in the tea.
He admitted that?
Yes. I think I feel it working.
I don't. How long was the captain ill?
Over a week.
Then Clark's poison can't work too fast. And there must be an antidote.
But only a doctor'd have an antidote.
There's a doctor at Herschel Island, a good one, with a well-stocked dispensary.
That's nearly 20 miles.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and die when there's something I can do about it.
Can you find your way in the storm?
King can. Come on, boy. Home, let's go.
The men men followed the sergeant as he hit the trail without any question. They made better time on that stage of their journey than on any other, for the fear of death was with them every second, and the cold and the biting wind was almost forgotten. They must reach Herschel Island.
There it is!
They did. And when they topped an icy ridge and saw the lights of the post, they even broke into a run.
Welcome to Herschel Island!
Inside the post, Dr. Mason was waiting for them. And behind him, a large table had been set up. The aroma of caribou stew, hot biscuits, and coffee filled the air.
We made it, Doc.
Tell him, Sergeant. Tell him we must have the antidote, quick.
The antidote's waiting for you.
No, you don't.
On the table.
You don't understand. We've been poisoned.
I understand. The first thing I'm prescribing for you is food.
What? Just food?
You'd better obey the doctor. I told you, he knows his business.
That's the idea. The food will take care of your stomachs, and while you're eating, I'm sure the sergeant will set your minds at rest.
The sergeant explained, and now and then one of the men would look up from their food and grin sheepishly at him. They were safe. They were warm. The first sharp edge of their hunger was being appeased, and they could laugh easily at the trick that had been played on them.
Well, sir, we're grateful for you getting us here in spite of ourselves.
Hey, where's Mr. Clark?
Out in the kitchen helping the cook. I imagine second helpings will be in order.
Here they are, men. More stew and more biscuits.
And the autopsy, Doctor?
It's been performed. The captain died of natural causes.
Which means I'm going to have some of that stew myself. This case is closed.
Sergeant Preston will return in just a moment with a word about our next exciting adventure. Here's a Mutual note for you. America chooses Mutual as its Sunday suit. Yes, more people listen to the Mutual Sunday shows because they suit the entire family. Pop, Mom, and the kids all cast their vote for True Detective Mysteries, which are based on actual police records. Week in and week out, True Detective Mysteries sing the praises of the brilliant police work, of gallant police detectives and their modern scientific methods that make your town a safer place in which to live. Other Mutual shows that suit America on Sunday include The Gabby Hayes Show, where the famous Western character actor narrates tales of Western heroes, and Nick Carter, who is rated tops by millions of mystery fans, and the all-knowing, all-seeing, yet invisible Shadow proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that crime does not pay in tales of suspense and intrigue. So this Sunday, and every Sunday, do as most Americans do. Hear Mutual's famed Sunday Suit Entertainment over most of these stations. And now, here is Sergeant Preston.
Sergeant Preston reporting for duty, Inspector.
Sergeant, Fred Bertram, office manager of the mining company, has disappeared. So has a large payroll.
You believe he stole the payroll, sir?
The circumstances bear out that belief. He worked late, didn't go home. This morning the office was locked. So was the safe. The cash for the payroll was gone. Only Bertram and the mine owner knew the safe combination.
I see.
My only instructions are, Sergeant, find Fred Bertram and bring him back, along with that cash.
I'll do my best, Inspector.
The evidence against Fred Bertram is strong, and Preston little realizes that his search for the missing office manager will bring him face to face with killers. Be sure to hear this next exciting adventure. These radio dramas, a feature of Sergeant Preston of the Yukon Incorporated, are created by George W. Trendle, produced by Trendle Campbell Muir Incorporated, directed by Fred Flowerday, and supervised by Charles D. Livingston. The part of Sergeant Preston is played by Paul Sutton. Sergeant Preston of the Yukon is brought to you every Tuesday and Thursday. This is J. Michael wishing you goodbye and good luck until Thursday. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.